Dr. Hsu is a practicing pediatrician at the Children's Hospital in Philadelphia. He is also a founding elder of the Chinese City Chinese Christian Church, along with his wife. And his specialty is in behavioral medicine. It's in working with families and with children with autism and ADHD. So I think he has a lot to share. And I think that as he speaks, you'll learn more about him. I think in the audience, we have folks that are interested in this topic, as well as probably some teachers and Sunday school teachers and childcare workers what we're seeing is, I think there are families coming into church and into Sunday school with some special needs, and I think it would be really wonderful to just learn more about how to also not only meet the needs of the children, but how to engage parents and the families as we provide Sunday school education at BCEC. So what we're going to do is Dr. Hsu is going to speak for about 40 minutes, and then we'll stop him because I know that there'll be lots of good questions from the audience, and we just want to have a dialogue. And then at the end, we also have another guest who wants to who will talk about some of the work that she's doing here in Chinatown around respite care. So,
I just had lunch with your Chinese pastor, Daniel Chen. I met him when he was in seminary school. My former roommate from college actually was 2 years ahead of him in Gordon Conwell Seminary School. He's now in California. He taught me a lot about children with special need. He has one himself. His first son has Down syndrome, trisomy. I'm a pediatrician, so I deal with special needs children all the time. I'm a general pediatrician, so I work with, I don't do surgery, but I work with, and my special interest is indeed children with developmental delay, a whole range of them, including autism, ADD, some adjustment issues, oppositional behavior, people who would throw tantrums, social phobia, language delay, and a bunch of them. So today I'd like to explore how the Bible views these children and perhaps how we can, more in a practical way, in the question and answer, hopefully we would talk to explore issues of how families and teachers and church members can face a myriad of children, a myriad of challenges of living and working with children with special needs. All right. So before I begin, let's bow for a word of prayer. Heavenly Father, thank you for this chance. They are all created in your image, each one of them, even the ones with lack of ability to talk, even the ones that cannot walk. You have demonstrated that when you were on earth, you care for them because we are your image bearer. We pray, Father, that we will ask the Bible how we should look at these children with special needs the way you would see them, and teach us to be true to the gospel to these children. In Christ's name we pray. Amen. So stop me at 40 minutes because this is a topic that we can speak for hours. I'll tell you a bit more about my background later. I'm currently the associate medical director of a large, what we'll call FQHC. How many of you are in healthcare? All right, what do you do? Boston Children? I almost went there. I did. I stayed at CHOP. I interviewed at Boston. And PT, which school? Boston U? Okay, MGH. Other than healthcare, who else are here who is interested in this topic? Teachers? Okay, do you have children with special needs in your... Okay, what kind? Okay. Okay. But do you run a special ed class? Okay, all right. So you have a mainstream and okay. And other interests that has other people with other reasons for being here?
I wonder when my son is able to
Okay, you want the diagnosis? Wife of, you're the wife of the pastor? Okay, your wife. Okay. Okay. All right. I'll go quickly through the formal part of the talk, some of the background, and then go more into the detail of actual them. I do a lot of administration. I spend half time in seeing children, which is my love, and the other half time to help develop a health clinic in Philadelphia. And my times are limited, so as I train other people to see the regularly healthy children, I told the parents who used to follow me for 20 years now, you're so busy, I can't see you. So, well, unless you have autism, ADHD, unless you have cancer, you have terrible disease, you lost a leg or an arm, you can talk, you know, don't see me. See my helpers. Because I only spend time with people with special needs. I use the analogy that when you go to a restaurant, the chief cook, cook the shark's fin, the regular cook make the rice and the cao fan, right? So I told my healthy children, you are just cao fan, bak fan, It's just don't waste your time on me because you wait forever to see me. And this workshop, I like to spend some time. So why is there an interest in special needs? Probably many reasons, but I shall give you three of such reasons. Maybe you can help me advance. You can, yeah. Well, first of all, Jesus gave a darn about it. All right, when he was on earth, he's interested in the desolate of the society, the poor, the helpless. It's very clear. You read the gospel, it's all over the gospel. And I'm sure you've heard enough, you've been in church for a while, you know what Jesus does. And Luke recorded Jesus' inaugural sermon. This is the first recorded sermon of Jesus coming back to his hometown. And he quoted, he was given a scroll, and he opened to Isaiah 61, verses 1 and 2, and then recorded in Luke, the only one recorded in Luke. Jesus himself read the Isaiah passage. He said, "The Spirit of the Lord is upon me, because he, God, has appointed me, Jesus, to proclaim good news to the poor. He has sent me to proclaim liberty to the captives and recovery of sight to the blind." In fact, in the Old Testament, there was never a recorded passage of a miracle of restoration of the blind, but only in the New Testament. The Old Testament, there was none. But at least it's proclaimed, it is prophetically mentioned in the Old Testament that one day the Messiah will open the eyes of the blind. And indeed, in New Testament, it happened. So open the recovery of sight to the blind. So ophthalmologists among us, you're doing what Jesus is doing, right? To set at liberty those who are oppressed, to proclaim the year of the Lord's favor, which is the year of Jubilee. How many knew about the concept of the year of Jubilee? Okay, so you're all educated, you're all well-churched. So every 49 years, you have the year of Jubilee. It never happened in the Old Testament time, although the teaching has been there since Mosaic time, to Moses' time. And yet, Jesus came and declared, "I am coming here to declare the year of Jubilee happening right now, because I am going to restore the sight of the blind and all." So he rolled up the scroll, and gave it back to the attendant, and sat down. And the eyes of all the synagogue were fixed upon him. And he began to say to them, "Today, this scripture has been fulfilled in your hearing." So Jesus' inaugural sermon is to say that I came for these people. So Jesus gave a whole lot of kudos to this topic. Number two, second reason, the gospel compels us. And this is a tough concept. And I think I'm teaching a course on corporal biblical parenting. One day when I have a chance, if they fly me back again, I'll talk about that. It's a concept that is new, and it's a concept that is very anti, that is very much needed in Chinese churches, and I'll explain why. It is a paradigm change of the good that we believe. Good meaning the goals that we Chinese Christians and non-Chinese, how we glorify success. Because we glorify success as in being good, being excellent. And there are many biblical support for that. We ought to be good, right? We ought to do things that are best, and we ought to be excellent in our field. Daniel was excellent. Joseph was excellent. They're number two in the whole kingdom, even though it was a foreign in a secular world. They were number two in that kingdom. So they must be darn good. So there is that. But in our concept of parenting, we also look at the tiger moms among us. Isn't she from Yale or somewhere? Right. So they're the tiger moms, and in Chinese are always tiger moms and tiger dads. Because, you know, how many of our children do piano? All right. This is a low number. Maybe you're too shy to admit that. But I mean, if you go to a Chinese, black population, I was trained to chop, and among my people, they barely have enough to eat, let alone play piano. Right? They have no furniture, let alone piano. So, but among the Chinese, these are the sort of the culture things that we do. We crave excellence and superiority in this direction of life, of craving superiority, craving excellence, which by itself is neutral, perhaps good. However, when we do that, we glorify ourselves often, far more than we glorify God. But the gospel points to the opposite direction. The gospel reaches for the poor. In Matthew, in the gospels, the Beatitudes, blessed are the poor. And in some ways, they are truly the poor, not just the poor in spirit, as Luke as in the Luke Gospel, they say, blessed are the poor in spirit. And some translated to the poor in spirit, as in spiritually poor, understanding our depraved state, needing salvation and all that. But in Jesus' time, he's talking to poor people. Blessed are you who are poor, physically, monetarily poor. There is a tendency for men and women of our times, especially Chinese, to glorify the elite. In Hong Kong, where I came from, and Pastor Daniel came from Hong Kong. How many came from Hong Kong? All right, you know what I mean by that. I mean, it's you know, when I was there, there's three universities, so you have to beat everybody else, you know, 1 out of 10. I came from a reasonably good, you know, high school. I have to be the top. I have to beat 9 people to get to university. All right, now, today is different, but there are a lot more universities. So you have to be elite, you have to be good to get even ahead. And the subjects we go into are engineering, civil engineering in Hong Kong, and physician, and being a doctor, and being so. And that's how I was lured into this, because I look around, you know, where do good students go? Lawyer, you know, doctor, engineer. So I learned to become one. Right? I didn't know the Lord then, and so no surprise. And yet the Bible's direction is different. The Bible says, "Blessed are the poor." So there's a tendency for us to glorify ourselves. Look at the soap operas. Look at Dallas. You know, everybody's darn rich, right? They have. I remember when we went to, my friend told me at a CHOP children's hospital, they're very rich alumni. They went to Campbell's soup owner, right? And they went to the house mansion, of course, and they asked the owner about, where does your property end? So the owner just half jokingly said, "Well, you can't see it because the world is round." Okay? Because the world is round, it's so far away that it's beyond the horizon. You can't see it. That's how big the property is. But that's how we glorify. That tendency of wanting to be educated, privileged group, betrays self-sufficiency. We want to be self-sufficient. We want to be good. We want to be, I made it. We want to, we learned the humble way. You know, the Pharisees learned that too. We all learned that. And in fact, that's how the Babel of Tao, you know, fell apart. Right? They thought they were so good that they can reach God. And in the Bible, in Genesis chapter 11, it says, then they, meaning the people who built the Babel of the Tao, They said, "Come, let us build ourselves a city and a tower with its top in the heavens, and let us make a name for ourselves." Not for God. Let us make a name for ourselves. So, in so doing, God has to intervene. And yet, if you look at the gospel of Christ is an active demonstration of just the opposite. Just the opposite. In Paul, he wrote in Corinthians, he says, "But God chose what is foolish in the world to shame the wise. God chose what is weak in the world to shame the strong. He chose what is low and despised in the world, even things that are not, to bring to nothing things that are, so that no human being might boast in the presence of God." If the gospel almost selectively reach out to the foolish, to the weak, to the lowly, to despise the things that are not, and certainly not middle-class American, especially not Chinese churches, maybe we, as a body of Christ, can benefit to pay attention towards the forgotten sector of a human race. So the gospel, if you look at the crux of it, the inside of the gospel, it is speaking towards the forgotten few, the ones that has more needs. And if you look at the body of Christ, Paul taught in 1 Corinthians, on the contrary, and he's talking about different parts of the body, especially in the Church of Corinthians, there are a lot of infighting. You know, they say that, you know, they just separate themselves. On the contrary, the parts of the body, meaning the church, that seems to be weaker are indispensable, Paul says. And on those parts of the body that we think less honorable, we bestow the greater honor. And our unpresentable parts are treated with greater modesty, which our more presentable parts do not require. But God has so composed the body, giving greater honor to the part that lack it, that there may be no division in the body, but that the members may have the same care for one another. If one member suffers, all suffer together. If one member is honored, all rejoices together. Jesus' disciples, all of us, should therefore be on the outlook for the children with special needs, because that's what Paul taught. And we should play a part in caring for them. The corporate aspect of parenting is quite lacking in Chinese churches. I was teaching this class in my own church. I've done parenting for years. That's my special area also. And I've been teaching it so many years, and I said, but people are doing the same thing. What's wrong with our teaching method of teaching parenting? Well, because we want our children to be good, to listen. Oh, they don't listen. Make him listen. Give me a pill. That's a frequent question in my... You know, so ADHD kids, you know, they just give me a pill. The corporal aspect, meaning collectively, how do we parent together? That's distinctly lacking. And the reason I say that is, if you see a special child who's throwing tantrums, who's slow, who's autistic, who's whatever, who has physical disability, although you would have, oh, let me help them, but deep down inside as a parent, you say, thank God, that's not my child. Wouldn't you say that? Thank goodness, that's not my child. You may say, not that you wish them ill or bad luck, but you say, thank God my child is not like that. Thank God my child can talk. Thank God my child can go to school. Thank God my child is whatever. There is even a book that tells you how to teach your children to be genius, written by Christians. Right? So this couple, very renowned, very respected, happened to have talented children who at 13 went to college. All right. So she wrote a book as a mother, How to Teach Your Child to Be a Genius. Well, if you look at the underlying theology, is that human effort that makes them smart? No. Is that something shameful when they're not smart? No. The Bible didn't teach that. Right? So we have to be very careful about our theology. Because if our theology is built on good equals blessed equals smart equals plays piano equals Harvard equals Cambridge equals Oxford, that's not what the Bible says. So where did we go wrong? We don't do collective parenting. We don't say, we look at my child, your child. I remember when my children were young. They're old now. And my son sort of, I tried him on Ritalin. He, you know, so if you hear the way I talk, you can understand why he needs Ritalin. He just says rambunctious, and the teacher, Sunday school teacher, was my own student. So he knows how I feel about children. So she came to me and said, Phil, I know you can understand this, but I want to tell you how your child was misbehaving. Okay? Telling me, her Sunday school teacher, how my son now in her Sunday school is misbehaving. I said, thank you, Debbie. Thank you for trusting me that you and I are collectively together helping my child. It could be your child, but we need to work together. You are the Sunday school teacher and me as the parent. We work together to make sure that this child is growing up rightly in the kingdom of God. So it's no, how dare you tell me about my son? I'm a pediatrician, of course I know how to deal with him. No, that collective aspect is lacking. I have another parent who fight with the school over 2 points, you know, should have gotten 98, how come you gave him 97? Or 96, you know, fight with the school. That's not, I mean, that's just not the direction the Bible is going. And our craving for good, for excellence, for better than other people, for going to Harvard at 15, that whole concept, although it's neutral, it's not what the Bible is teaching. So we need to be careful. Now, and in that sense, if we if we learn to do parenting corporally as a group, then it's no longer your child that is in need. It's our children who is in need. We need to work with them together. And that's a much more biblical concept, because Paul said that already, right? In the weaker body, the weaker parts of the body should deserve more respect and honor and protection. That's the biblical concept. And body meaning all of us. Okay. Now, thirdly, it's the essence of pure religion. This I will talk about tomorrow during sermon, so I won't go into a lot of detail, because otherwise you won't come to service tomorrow. I'll say the essence of that. By caring for children with special needs, we live out the true essence of the gospel. In James 1:27, it says, religion that is pure and undefiled before God the Father is this, to visit orphans and widows in their affliction, and to keep oneself unstained from the world. So James made it very clear. Don't talk, don't do this. The word religion in the original Greek language is ritual. Don't be just ritualistic or being a ritually okay Christian. James is a Jew, as you know, and James grew up in a pretty, Joseph, I'm sure, his biological father is, what I'm talking about, right? The book of James, Jesus' brother and his father's, Mary and Joseph probably grew up in a godly environment. Mary and Joseph are very godly people. And so he knows what it means to be a godly Jew. So I'm sure he kept as far as best as he can the ritualistic aspect of his faith or of his religion. But he, after he came to Christ, wrote, he says, religion, ritualistically, what is true, pleasing to God, what is pure and undefiled before God, is to visit orphans and widows, the people who are in need. So again, because that's how our faith is manifested, that we pay attention to these people with special needs. Matthew, I won't go into detail, but you remember the Matthew 25, chapter 25 passage where Jesus separated the goat and the sheep? Remember that? So it's very clear that when the king came back and said to the right, come, all you blessed by the Father, because when I was hungry, you gave me food. When I was thirsty, you gave me drink. When I was naked, you clothed me. When I was sick, you visited me. I was in prison, you came to me. And the righteous will answer, Lord, when did I do that? I'm jumping ahead. And Jesus said, when you did this to one of the least of my brothers, you did it to me. Jesus himself said that. That's almost one of the criteria to define how God truly sees your salvation. Because when you do that to one of the least of my brothers and sisters, you did it to me, as if to Jesus. And that's pure religion. When I was in Guatemala, in the short-term mission, second time I went back, first time I was there to do language study, I visited I don't even remember his name now, but he was at that time 17. He was, he was involved in an armed robbery, meaning he was robbing the bank. And they're very young. They rob the banks, and they're recruited by the bank leaders, the robbers. And they say, come on, let me just, So he ran the slowest. He's in the back. He was shot in the back, L5. So he was paralyzed from waist down. He came to Christ. He lived in the slum. He lived in the basura, which is the word for garbage, meaning Spanish-speaking people here. Okay. Basura, it's the city dump. The city would dump all the garbage, just like our city dump, our landfill here. So it stinks. They live there. They build houses using whatever they dump out from garbage. And he was there, paralyzed from waist down. And I remember I went to visit him. There was a ministry there called Caring Ministry. And I brought some equipment because I learned from that he has sores on his butt because he can't move. So I was bringing my hemostat and some simple equipment. And I was reaching out into his wound. He has a big decubitus ulcer on his hips. So big wound up there because there's no feeling. He has no sensation, no movement. So, and I just moved my hemostat. I keep going and going, and I hit all the way to the bones. And it stinks. And he has fever every day. No wonder he has fever. So I touched the bone. And I pull out, and I got my gauze, and I clean it. And I couldn't control myself then. I was weeping at that time. I was crying. And as if I'm reaching into the hands of Jesus, into the feet of Jesus. Because this is a brother who, we may say he deserved it, but he came to Christ later on. And I was able to serve him as if I'm serving Christ. I'm trying to clean his wound as if it is Christ sitting there. Now, granted that I didn't make an iota of difference to his, you know, he was still living in Guatemala. I came back to the States. It's not like I adopted him to my, you know, home. But I sense that God brought me there to not so much for me to make a difference in his life, but for him and his story to make a difference in my life. That I once was there and I felt this brother is a representation of Jesus. Just like in Matthew 25, when you did this, the least of my brother, you did it to me. So as I live my life as a Christian, existentially, I need to experience what does it mean to be living. You know, we all were taught to go to church. We all were taught to do the right thing. And we should. We should continue. Hebrew tells us that we should be going to worship. We should be reading the Bible. We should be praying. But sometimes there are moments such as those that tells me, I'll tell you this, I was closer to Jesus than every other sermon that I've been at that time. I was closer to Jesus when I did that than every other praise event. That many times when I was in praise events that I feel filled with the Spirit. But likewise, when I attend to the need of someone, the least of the brothers and sisters, I sense that God was with me. Two of my college roommates, Pastor Chan's former roommate, I guess, housemate, someone whom I met in college. Actually, I led him to Christ. Long story short, he has a we lived together for 2 years. He got married and has his first son was a special needs child with Down syndrome. At that time, I thought for a long time. I said, "How come it didn't happen to me? Maybe I would have better means as a physician." I learned then that maybe God said that I wasn't ready yet. I didn't have what it takes to care for a child with special needs. So God gave these special needs children to some more deserving people among us. All right? But collectively, we have a responsibility. It's our children. And not just in the church, outside the church. These are image bearer. If I can have the next slide. We're made in God's image. In Genesis, we knew that. God created men, meaning men and women, in his own image. In the image of God, he created him. Men and female, he created. Before I get into the specifics, I want to answer two fundamental questions. By the way, I would skip this part and I'll talk a little bit more tomorrow. In the Gospel of Luke, in the Good Samaritan, the lawyer asked Jesus, "Who are my neighbors?" Remember that story? And Jesus' answer is the whole, you know, Good Samaritan story. Good Samaritan helping the Jew who was beaten, robbed, and so on. And in the end, Jesus essentially said, "Whoever is in need is your neighbor, even if that person is your enemy, as the Jews and the Samaritans are enemies." And Jesus says, "Go do likewise. Go do likewise." So we indeed, the special needs children around us are God's way of putting them there for us to experience God, not in a way, "Oh, I did some good work, God, I deserve." No, of course not. I would hope that our teaching, and I'm sure our teaching from Gordon Conwell is salvation by grace, not by works. And yet, once we're saved, how we live out our faith, how we experience Christ with us, is indeed through how we live out the gospel by carrying out what Christ would have us do. Because if Christ were on earth, he would have done that. Now, I want to answer two questions. Number one, let's see if the next slide show it. It's the why question, handling the blame, right? I would hope that I would jump further. The why question. I will talk about that tomorrow more. A lot of people want to give a reason for the illnesses. They prefer trisomy 21 Down syndrome with a chromosomal defect so that it's easier to, oh, because there's chromosome, as if parents can understand it easier. Oh, you have an extra chromosome in number 21. But autism, there's no answer. People keep asking, you know, there's no answer for autism. It's multifactorial, And so there's no reason, as if there's, with less of a reason, there's less of an ability to cure it. Not that we can cure trisomy anyway. But we ask, you know what? Deep down inside, no matter what reasons you give, ultimately the parents will ask the question, why me? Why my child? Why us? Why the whatever family? And they would ask, what did I do to deserve this? The same question was asked in John chapter 9 when a man born blind was cured by Jesus, and the disciples, enlightened group, okay, not any street people, was asked, who sinned that this man is born blind? Is it him? You can't have sinned in utero because he was born blind. What did he do inside a mother's womb to deserve this? He kicked too hard? You know, watch out. If you get kicked too hard, maybe you say, you know, you may be born blind. No, of course not. And the parents? No. Jesus himself said, no, neither, but for the glory of God. So I think we as Christians need to know, at least intellectually and biblically, that Jesus made a very clear-cut answer that but that the works of God might be displayed in him. Now, watch the syntax, or watch the verbiage. It is the God of work might be displayed in him. Not that you guys can understand a theological point. Somehow, as you know, that man came to Christ, right? At the end, Jesus gave him a chance and say, do you want to know the Messiah? And say, you know, I don't know who he is, but the one who opened your eyes, speaking to you, is. So he worshiped Christ. Now, so we need to wrestle with the question of blame. And secondly, we need to wrestle with the we need to receive the freedom stemming from acceptance. We had a newly diagnosed diabetic way back when I was a child. This mother just was horrified that her daughter, 9-year-old, was diagnosed with diabetes for the first time and needs insulin for the rest of her life. So for 4 days, she just sat there, sunken, crying, weeping, grieving, and just like catatonic, wouldn't do anything to learn to use, you know, insulin to help her daughter. But after 4 days, she came to the realization that she better accept this. She came to acceptance as a light dawned on her. And she came to realize that the only way to truly love her daughter is to give her daughter a fighting chance. So she got up, wiped her face, and told the doctor and the nurses, I'm ready to learn how to give insulin to my daughter. I'm going to learn how to take care of my daughter. Even though she asked the word, you know, same questions, why me, why her? She asked, after 4 days, she said, I don't have the answer, but I'm going to do it. And she accepted. You and I can walk alongside the parents of such children with special needs and become a fellow sojourner in this painful path of grief and acceptance. All right? Even if you didn't do a darn thing, at least you walk with them for 2 seconds. Even though I didn't do a darn thing to the Guatemalan child, I know I didn't. I cleaned his wound once, and I'm sure, you know, the wound would get infected again. I cleaned his wound once, but I walk alongside with them for 10 minutes. I went to the house and did that. Having dealt with the first two questions, let us together look at some of the practical things about, next slide, that together we can look at among the body of believers. And when we first learn to handle that within the body of believers, maybe, and this the later workshop is about how as health professionals you can do that. This slide I stole from, well, I borrow from Children's Hospital, Dr. Hilary Kruger, who's the director of CHOPS Autism Center. We collaborate with some workshops, and that's one of my advocacy role because nobody speaks to Chinese with autism. So the director says, look, we have the Hispanic material, and the Chinese don't come. Well, because you have no Chinese service. So I said, well, how can we do better? So why don't you come to me? I will set up shop. You know, 50 people came, all families and grandparents and whatever with autistic child, and I have tons of them because I specialize in that field, even though I'm a general pediatrician. So she brought her whole team, herself as a director, her speech therapist, her physical therapist, occupational therapist, her psychologist, all came, all of them Caucasian, blonde hair, blue eyes, sat there and created slides, and I translated for them. So she gave me this, I'm sure she would allow me to, I should have asked her permission first. You talk about, you know, Communications, does this, is there a, okay. No, don't move that. I just want my call pointer. The people who work with children understand we evaluate children's development looking at four general areas. So their communication skill, how they receive, okay, communication skills, fine motor, gross motor, using of hand, gross motor is in walking, squatting, sitting, crawling, and self-help adaptive skill like feeding themselves, sleeping, dressing, and social skills. Next. And ADHD is one of those where they have short attention span. In this country, the estimation is 2 to 7% of children has this condition of school-aged children. There are rating scales that we do with parents and teachers. Some of them needs an independent educational program, IEP, to help them in class. They need some behavioral support. Some of them eventually need some medication. And there's quite a bit of good medicine for that. And among the Chinese, the receptiveness of being treated with medication is lower, where the rate of the incidence is about 4 to 7%. We usually quote 4%, meaning out of 100 children, you have 4 that has the diagnosis. Meaning among the 4, maybe if you have 25% of that 4, you would have 1% needing medication. I have 6,000 patients in my practice. In theory, I should have 60 people on medicine, right? 1%. Well, I don't. I may have 12 on medication. But those 12, in other words, are the more severe ADHD, meaning the day they didn't take medicine, the parents would, oh, I ran out of medicine, please call it in right away. So they know they need the medicine, all right? So I sort of dealt with the higher end, the ones who are better convinced. I have one mother who was convinced that the child kept failing, and year after year, but the grandmother didn't agree. The grandmother believed that, hey, you don't take medicine, just whip them up, you know, get them in shape. So he failed year and year and year, and I couldn't get the mom to convince the grandmom because the grandmom calls the shot. And so, how many of you deal with children with ADD, ADHD? All right. Do you have any strategy you want to share? Keep them close to you. So, you know, if they're sitting, you know, even though they're taller, give them a preferential seating and give them instructions, not four, you know, instructions, but one at a time. You know, go, Johnny, can you pick that up and come back? And then where other people would give them, pick that up, close the door, come back, and then close your bag. Give them one instruction at a time. Work closely with parents. If they need medication, they may. And they quickly just go off-site and you just, you know, bring your eye-to-eye, body language. Johnny, I want you to sit here, right here, and you help them. And many of them do, as they grow older, improve. They don't grow out of it. They improve. The people with residual ADHD, actually not bad, because they can multi-process. They can do many things at a time. They have high energy. They sometimes are successful. Many of these, you know, people who sleep 4 hours and do 15 million projects, you know, people are with ADHD. So you can comfort mom that, you know, you pay more now, they'll pay you back later. Some of them needs medication, and I don't want to go into detail of how to medicate them. And weekends, do you keep them on the long week? You know, do you give them medication breaks in summertime? What do you do? Medications are quite effective. You have to watch for side effects, sometimes to sedate them. Occasionally suppress appetite. They are good long-acting medicine. There's a patch that you can put on. If they don't take, you know, if they're young, they don't take pills, that you can put them a patch. I have a couple of kids with ADHD who is mildly autistic, Asperger-ish, and they wouldn't take a pill because they're just too wild, and as you put a patch on, so that works. And you work closely with the school so that they are able to come forward and do that. And of course, many of them, because of the impulsivity, they get into trouble. I have one that the teachers keep complaining. In fact, they should have known. I asked the mom, is this a young teacher? you know, if it's an experienced teacher, they should have known, because the kid would just keep touching, you know, the neighbor, the other kid, and was keep being punished. You know, he just couldn't stop his hand from touching. Just give him a break. Put him in there and just to keep two seats open. Then that's how you deal with it. So I think the teacher needs to understand they have these conditions. If they do something bad and against the rule, they should be disciplined at school. But be understanding. Next. This is a big topic. We're not going to just deal with that. They have obviously social and a communication problem. The long term, that the term that we use to describe is lack of, you know, reciprocate, as in you say hi to me, I say hi back to you. So the lack of ability to reciprocate a social interaction. So reciprocity, I believe, is the word. I can never say that because I'm not native born. But they're not able to sort of respond back to you, not just language. So you say something, they have no clue what you're saying. All right. So they have major hallmark of they have inability to comprehend, read between the lines, understand an analogy. You say people in a stone house, if people who live in glass house don't throw stone, they don't understand what that means. You know, they say, oh, the stone is too heavy and the glass is light. They have poor eye contact. They have limited interest in playing with other children. They're a loner now. Loner and, you know, just people who like to play by themselves or social phobics are not autistic. All right. So the key is to talk to them. Once you can relate to them, they come in, you open your arm, they come and hug you. That's a good sign. And there is a scale called AmChat, which is used about 18 months to sort of screen for children with autistic behavior. They don't point, because if you point, oh, Johnny, look there. And then it's, oh, okay, they look there. But these children, they may not have that ability. They have also some unusual behavior. They line up toys. If they get a train set, they line them up very exactly. Okay, and some of them will stack books. You know, given books, they stack each one of them, you know, a perfect towel. And then they, you know, so they just have this, quote, weird ways of stacking the environment. They should work with the, you know, they should work with Amtrak. And they have some hand flapping. But again, it's a clinical diagnosis. There's no blood test for it. When school, usually by two, certainly three-year-old, you can sort of pick out the ones who seem to have autistic behavior. There's a few terms floating around that is similarly used. PDD, or pervasive developmental disorder, or autistic spectrum disorder. So it's clearly a whole spectrum. The milder case, they call them Asperger's, which are the people with perhaps a less involved form of autism. How many of you have seen a movie Rain Man? All right, so that's a sort of a dramatized version of it. Not everyone can memorize the whole textbook of phone book. Okay, so don't challenge your autistic child to go memorize a phone book. You didn't know page 3, line 3 is that number. What kind of autism are you? And there are severe ones and not so severe ones. I have one child, and this is an example of why it takes a whole family. This is a Fujian family who mother speaks enough English, pretty together, and very devoted to helping this child. First child, boy, and it's important because it's a boy, different from a girl. I'll tell you why. And you know the boy-girl issue. Right? If you have a boy, enough. If you have a girl, you know, just have more. So there are more boys than girls. Anyway, he has very severe autism. By 7 years old, he has maybe 3 words, barely. And he would just dance all over the place. His grandmother, meaning the mother's mother-in-law, meaning the father's mother, just basically said, look, he's autistic. We know that. We accepted that. He's beyond hope. He speaks 3 words by 7. There's no way he can carry the family name. So have another child. Meaning have another child, normal child, at least, you know, the our family can have a name, and just ignore this. Mother wouldn't, because she knows how much time it takes to care for this child. And she, you know, went to CHOP, and they've done everything they could, speech therapist, that she's exhausted her insurance, they do ABA, applied behavioral analysis to help, and mom read up all about that. You know, sometimes I would have to find out, oh, wow, mom, what is this thing again you say? Okay, well, let me read about this, because she's quite up to it. ABA, Applied Behavioral Analysis. And then when Temple University has a tape, they want to do a videotape on autism among Asian family. They asked me, do I want to participate? I said, absolutely, because this is one chance I can advocate for the Chinese family. So they made a tape you can look up online. It's called Autism in Asian Family. Right? It's a 7-minute tape after 30 hours of footage. They put it down to 7 minutes. It's not just me. Hillary Kruger, who produced these slides, myself and a Chinese pediatric psychiatrist, the three of us were interviewed, and there are four families with autism, Vietnamese, Cambodian, maybe two Chinese. One of the Chinese families is my patient. So I was interviewed on that also. And so I enter into this advocacy work. This child was so rambunctious. And when I went to the showing of Drexel has just opened an autistic center 2 years ago, and they have a program to train people to be therapists. And I look at him and I said, oh, I wish the Chinese could be trained. Okay, I wish it would save some spot for the Chinese. And he told me, nobody apply. I look at him and I said, you must be crazy. No Chinese apply. My church has 180 people. What are they doing sitting there? I have 180 people. Many of them were dying to find a job. Many of them, you know, F1, they have H1, they have OPT, H1B. They couldn't get a darn job. And yet you have opening for this program that he almost said, if anybody who is bilingual will automatically get in this 9-month program. And when they finish, they guarantee a job because the world needs these people. These people who can speak two languages. So I was just like, this is crazy. So I went back to my church and I was teaching Sunday school and I couldn't stop them. I said, you people should all drop what you're doing and go take this program. I almost went there myself and because I want to learn myself so I can teach other people. At least I can. So I actually brought the child back to see me and we have the ability of seeing them at will because we're FQXC. So just come on, it doesn't cost you a dime because they have free government insurance. So I brought him back and I spent an hour with him. Well, I have the luxury because I'm the director there. I said, I don't want to see other children. I just want to see you. So I spent an hour with him, and I tried out different methods of relating to him. And he would scream, mother brought some ji choy. What do you call that? Seaweed. That's the only thing that he likes to eat. And come in packages. Okay. And mom learned this. Great, smart mom. Give them all to me. I put it in my drawer, and so there's no more. So when he wants to do things, you want to do this? Okay, come. You see what I have? Your favorite seaweed. Do that, and I'll give you one. I just train him like a dog. Right? That's how you train dogs. Sit, good dog, you know, don't cross the road. And I was able to teach him to, he used to give me back hugs. I would stand there, he would move his back to me to hug. So I said, I want you to give me a front hug. So he come to me in the front and give me a hug, and I give him a seaweed. So he learned. He was jumping on my exam table. I said, no, I want you to come down. He wouldn't come down. I said, here's a seaweed. Come on down. So I teach him how to do that. And I taught him a few simple things. So I show mom, in 1 hour, I can teach him one thing. There's 365 days in a year. Maybe you can teach him 50 things. One thing per week. So they're teachable. But who can teach them? Nobody. Because there's no people studying that program. No bilingual. There's tons of, you know, there's not enough speech therapists. So I met a speech therapist among you. What's his name? Kim, is that? There's a speech therapist. I said, I need you, but I cannot steal her from Boston because they would kill me. I want the more the better. And I look at this and I said, why are we as a group of bodies teaching our children to go to engineering school when there's flooded with people? And yet there's a profession of helping profession and tons of special needs children who needs help. And yet there's a huge gap there. Where did we go wrong? Okay, so if we start looking at the kingdom of God and say, when we as parents ask a different question, no longer ask, what field has the best job prospect? What field can get you the fastest way to get your first house because you earn enough to save up a down payment and all that. No, that's, you know, we're all homeowners. But maybe what field is needed in this world? What field does, if Jesus were here, what field would he go into? He learned carpentry, right? Well, that's not his choice. It's probably his parents' choice, you know, because Joseph only knew how to do carpentry. So I learned carpentry. A few years ago, I thought, what can I do? I cannot be a healer as Jesus was. I'm just not. People that I healed died again. Jesus raised them from the dead. I couldn't do that, but maybe I can do woodwork. So I learned to do woodwork. But maybe today people would become healers, educators, teachers, and you would say, this is my child, this, as if this is my own son, my own daughter. And Jesus will pat me on the back and say, good job, well done, because when I was hungry, when I have autism, you spent time with me. When I couldn't talk, you went and learned speech therapy so that you can service me instead of that person that don't speak, you know, Chinese. So we learn the language. We're bilingual, not for no reason. We're bilingual for a reason. So don't take that privilege lightly. Take your cultural heritage, not as, wow, I can speak two languages. No, God gave me two languages. You better perform twice. Because God gave you more. He's asked for more. You have two languages. Wow. What did you do with those two languages? Get a higher salary on your resume? So I think we have, again, this is not a, you know, this is a, let's look at what God gave us, have a kingdom perspective, look at the areas where you can ask the question, where can I make a difference? There are learning delays. All right, I won't, you know, there are a lot of people with LD. I'm not teaching you to be pediatricians or social workers or psychologists, but the families that I treat, most of them are weak, not in motive. They're good parents wanting to help. They just don't understand the system. I have one mother who drove me nuts because she's not very sharp. Now, that's no discredit to her, but she I have to just walk her hand. And so I wrote in the chart yesterday when I was coming, I saw her yesterday. This mother was told many things. She never followed through with them. All right, she has three children, three boys. They're very tough. They all have trouble, and one don't speak, and mom barely speaks. So I hold her. I said, didn't the doctor who asked you to come back ask you to do this? Oh, and she doesn't remember. So I hold her hand, and I brought her to my referral person. Please make sure that she make this appointment. And she may have other issues, but in other words, I can say bad parenting, or I can say she just need help. All right, if I became the director of a place, and I can use my referral person to do that one, I can use my nurse to do this, maybe I can move these resources on her behalf. Jesus did. Jesus' ability to change water into wine. Now, Mary asked him at an unopportune time, but he said, okay, it's not my time yet, but I'll do it. Psh, water into wine. So I couldn't change water into wine, but I can make my referral specialist give her extra. So I said, please make sure that she gets to that speech therapy, and please make sure that they get this service or that service, and ask them to come back to see me. And so I walk her slowly, little by little. I was not very patient. I'm sure if Jesus came back to ask me tomorrow, say, Phil, you could have been more patient with that mother because she's not very smart. But you're smarter, so I hold you accountable. You're smarter. I hold you accountable to help the ones not as smart. Help them. So you have resources. You can work with them. And some of them needs an IEP. In the medical world, in the pediatric world, this concept came out, and I'm sure you who are trained in Boston children, immunologists, that too, because as different specialties needs coordination, I think we would coordinate, oh, you need to see an allergist, you need to see a GI doctor, you need the IEP, and a good medical home. And this is actually one of the reasons I get my job today, because I used to be running my own practice, 4,000 patients, 5 staff. Again, tomorrow I'll give you more of a story of my personal testimony, actually maybe later on. But I think, oh, this works. No, you were doing it for me? Really? Wow. So this is like ventricle.
He's so smart, he saw that you pressing it.
Maybe he should talk on my behalf. So we do this, we help families bridge the economic and social barriers. We as primary care physicians help coordinate care. We muster resources on their behalf. We work with school officials. We work with social workers, PT and OT, to do that. And perhaps we can have a role in this healing process. So I think we all have some role. Right. Now, if you have absolutely no role, you have no training, maybe you can donate to some places that has, you know, that does that. One of my requests, which Sam, which Sam would nicely consent. I said, don't pay me. Help give the honorarium to this Esperanza Health Center, which is a place that taught me how to do Christ-centered healthcare work, because they did that. And I learned all my healthcare, the biblical healthcare from them. I volunteered with them for about 6 years. So I learned firsthand how they did it. And maybe they can next. I'm going to stop here and just entertain some question, right? You know, probably gone beyond time. You got a question?
So I know you mentioned a strategy for aging, and I was wondering if you had a strategy that is kind of a type of.
We'll find out what kind of learner they are. Some are visual learners, some are audio learners. Some work with very concrete things. So once we find out their way of learning, we can enhance that by using those. We work with parents, whatever one simple task we teach at school. I presume you're a school teacher?
I'm a guidance.
Okay. So you work in the academic setting, and we reinforce that. Communicate that with other people, you know, home. You tell them, these are the strategies we're using. Mom, please do the same thing at school. And if there's a way you can communicate with them, these are the things we taught today, help them out. This is where healthcare is fragmented, because we are taught, and I'm sure specialists know that we're taught to deal with the here and now. You have this disease. You have Job syndrome. I almost became famous with the Job syndrome. I'll tell you the story later. You have this condition. Let me help you. And yet we didn't realize that the mom or the dad or the caretaker is so far from, they barely have enough to eat. They have two jobs. They couldn't, you know, I have one mother who has a lot of trouble because she just recently went back to work. So she has no time to do anything. If you don't understand that part, you can give them a whole list of fantastic suggestions. They cannot carry it out. So there are a lot of gaps in healthcare. So I think we do well by paying attention to that and help them out. So we can still teach these children. Now, we need to change our expectation for ADHD children. All right. So if we excel academically by passing tests, by being attentive to the ABCD answer and picking the right answer, these children don't do well on those grounds, but they can do fantastic with something else. They can be fantastic camp counselors. They can talk a storm. They can run a mile. They may be fantastic basketball players. I don't know what they do well in, but there are some areas. And to find that, put them there. Because we need to have, as Chinese families and non-Chinese families, we need to go far beyond our concept of what is good. Because we always look at what is good as what is academically good. That's not how Christ defined us.
Do you take risk scans of patients?
For what conditions? Mostly not needed. Mostly not needed. If you look at the brain scans, I mean, maybe there's some research. PET scans may show a slight difference in here and there. The majority of autistic children are not diagnosed with a particular scan. In fact, Autism Center at Children's Hospital, they don't do any scanning routine. Now, if they see someone who's staring away, you know, if they think they have some kind of seizure, then they do an EEG. And they found abnormal EEG, then they do an MRI to see if there was some insult at birth. So other than that, to rule in or rule out autism, scan is not useful, nor is blood test. So don't ask your suspected autistic child's mothers, oh, go get a blood test, because then they really believe that the blood test can help them. When they come to me, oh, the teacher says you can do a blood test and diagnose autism. I said, no, wrong answer. It's all observational, what we call clinical, meaning I observe you, I watch you, I talk to you, I maybe do some questionnaire, asking teach questions at school. In autism, mostly it's just observation. And the psychologists are very skillful in that. They ask questions, they watch what they do, and they make that diagnosis.
It's simple.
Similar, right. Of course, they have different behaviors. Right.
Just in the church context, do you have suggestions for practical ways?
Have all the parents come together? Yeah, the corporate parenting, corporate parenting is not something taught a lot. The Bible didn't teach a whole lot about corporate parenting. Maybe in the Jewish time they practice it because everybody watch out for everyone's children. They all know that Jesus came from Moses and Joseph and Mary. Oh, I watch you grow up, right? Maybe there's some hint of corporate parenting. But today we don't do enough of that. I think it's reasonably strong evidence from the Bible that, yeah, that's a good thing. Okay, we care for each other's children. And so three things we children, parents need to know. Number one, they need to trust each other. If you saw something wrong with my child or they act in a certain way that you think you should intervene, please do. We have to tell each other, please do that for my child. Do me a favor, discipline him. Or at least tell me. All right. Number two, stop comparing your child with another person's child. Because that's not, the Bible never asks us to compare. We're not, oh, but Jesus, I should do this because I'm better than him. The Bible never talks about comparison. We're never good enough. So it doesn't matter if you're better than, you know, little Joseph. So as we do that, we stop needing to have our children to become proof that, hey, I'm a better parent. My child can do this better than yours. That concept is essentially unbiblical. If we drop that, then we would save time on proving ourselves through our children. You know, when they do a recital and won first prize, okay, they won first prize. We don't even talk about that. And I've seen I don't know which church it is. I heard, you know, there's a Princeton church near Princeton where they have newcomers, non-believers, who come in, and the non-believer would come in. I'm not sure if it's church group. But they would say, well, my child is a valedictorian. He or she won the recital, you know, number one, 3 years in a row, and just list a list of like four or five like spectacular, and was interning at Harvard, and whatnot. And the group says, "Oh, is that all? You know, we no longer need to prove ourselves, our smartness through our children. We don't need to, because God does not judge us that way. If they happen to be smart, so be it. In fact." Beware, because God is going to ask double, you know, from them. Not that you would make them dumb, but you give them. Not that you don't hold them accountable to use their talents. Teach them to be responsible, as opposed to teach them to be smart. So always teach, Johnny. Great job. You did a good job by doing this. You did a great job in scoring the score you did because I saw you study yesterday. That's why you get 90 points. As opposed to you got 90 points. Great. And in fact, Chinese parents 90 only. 99, where's that 1 point? Right? Do you do that to you? No, hopefully you don't. 99 points? In fact, if you have 100 points, you would ask, does your teacher give a 101? Yeah, but I think, you know, that grade conscious, that achievement conscious, we can drop that facade. We don't define ourselves, who we are as parents, by our children's, and so we don't need to compare anymore. What a freedom we have, all right? And teach them to be responsible, to be Christ-centered, so that when they are good, applaud them when they say, I want to go to, you know, a missions trip in Honduras. Do that rather than they went to Harvard for a sightseeing or whatever. I think if we, and I mean, it's the same thing as, and so the collective parenting is us trusting each other. And in that sense, maybe some education, because if someone's way off and just teaching stuff that, and so we have some common grounds. Right, and I think in that sense, Sunday school teachers, your whole Sunday school department, and I use this to encourage my Sunday school because Sunday school is usually a weak department in many churches. They use Sunday school as a babysitting service, and I think it's far more than that. Two very prominent preachers of our time, Billy Graham, when he preached, he constantly referred to who led him to Christ, a Sunday school teacher. Tim Keller, if you were to, I'm a favorite. He's one of my favorite preachers, so I listen to more of them. Many times he has quote verbatim what his Sunday school teacher said about that universe, you know, that model of universe. Verbatim. Well, he paid attention. His Sunday school teacher must be darn good to catch someone as ADD as, you know, Tim Keller, as bright as Tim Keller, to be able to still catch his attention. So these are people who leave a mark in our children's mind. Yes. We refer them. Yeah, we refer them. At the concept, and we refer them not only the professional, they need care, they need medication, they need a whole lot of therapy, they need cognitive therapy, they need, but to talk to parents and have them convinced that it is not just bad luck or poor training or they ate something wrong, they took the herbal medicine, or someone said something, they got scared and wondered, this is real. Even among my staff, people with depression, they would believe, oh, he can grow out of it, it's a matter of will. You know, they're too weak, they're weak-minded, so they're depressed. So that's something we need to change the concept. If your health professional should lead and say, no, depression is born with. You know, I mean, I think, you know, I'm not suggesting therefore because it is therefore all depressed persons should be treated with medication, but depression is not to be blamed. A lot of people still blame depression. I work with a sister in my church who has long, deep depression, and me and my the minister, who is a woman, and we both jointly care for her, and we allow her to call us anytime. When she was in her depressive situation, she has direct access to my cell phone. Not every patient do that, obviously, but she's a sister in my church. So I think we can change the church concept if we are physicians. You're a fellow? Okay. I think to at least teach people what is known in medical science. I mean, we use data, we use evidence, we use research, and we can teach better. Yeah, they clearly need psychiatrists, and that's another area very lacking. I grab a hub-trained psychiatrist who is Chinese. I grab him, and he said, I wish I can get a job at your organization. He says, you get a job guaranteed by me as the associate medical director. I can give you a job now. We desperately need Chinese-speaking psychiatrists. And Tufts University has a South Cove Community Health Center that did a fantastic job in recruiting psychiatrists from China, so they're guaranteed to speak Chinese. Smart move, extremely smart move. I wish we can do that.
Chinese are very reluctant to train
psychiatric problems. Can we turn off the projector? Yeah.
The Christian Chinese have another layer of reluctance to sometimes address mental problems. How do you overcome that?
I would probably start with the pulpit. Because this is the reluctance to accept that is unbiblical. Yeah, all over the literature, and if you look at Westminster has a CCCF, Christian Counseling Educational Foundation. They deal with depression. They deal with all kinds of mental illness. They train biblical counselors to handle these illnesses. So I think the proper recognition of mental illness, the blame factor, who did wrong? Well, you must have, what kind of family did you come from? You have depression? What kind of parents do you have? All those are wrong answers, and Satan loved that kind of response. Because then you got trapped into, I have something to blame. It's the parents, so they don't deserve help. So I think I think the healthcare workers among us need to speak up. We need to speak up and talk about depression. So even as a non-psychiatrist, and I say that because there's no other psychiatrist in my neck of wood in Philadelphia. There's like one or two Chinese. So I have to step up. Because I'm more recognized by people saying, no, depression is a disease, just like cancer is a disease. I have to tell my congregation, I said, would you, as a parent, have a child diagnosed as leukemia, not seek the best oncologist to help you do chemotherapy, lose all your hair, vomit like crazy? Would you not do that extreme to get your child cured for leukemia so you have a chance? But when it comes to depression, which they can cut themselves, they can die, they can suicide. You're just stuck there and not do anything. Oh, let me pray through this. Which mother would say to a pastor, my son is diagnosed with leukemia, I decided not to bring him to the hospital to get chemotherapy, can you pray for me? Right? So, you know, if we look at both, what that is biological basis, I think we need to educate our people more. So, if that's happening, that's Satan's lie. We need to aggressively head on address that. I preach at my church, and I've preached on that subject. And I said, depression is not a... In fact, blindness is not even a consequence of sin. And depression is not a consequence of sin. Okay, the people who had a bad life... The rob, if you look at the people who have a bad life, the prostitutes, they don't get depressed anymore, right? The robbers, they don't get depressed anymore. Depression just hits everybody. So we need to be firm on that. Whether we treat them with medication is a different issue. I know there's the acceptance of treatment is even worse among Chinese.